Welcome to the 200% Life Podcast with Adam Hergenrother and Caitlin Frotlin, where we bring you weekly insights into spiritual growth and business success.
You know, one of the most interesting questions that we get a lot, and I think this stems from people searching for the right answers, which I love hearing this, which is just, how do I know I'm living my authentic life? How do I experience my authentic self? And I think people say this in different ways. I think they ask it like, they actually use the word authentic. I think also times people use the word, like, how do I know I'm living on purpose? How do I know that I am living from God's wishes? How am I know that I'm living to do what I'm supposed to do? There's a lot of different ways people use that language, but essentially what people are asking is, how do I know I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing here?
Yeah.
Is that what I want you to think about?
Totally. Yeah. And I think a lot of people that listen to this are probably also wanting to serve. Like, how do I serve at my highest level and serve my purpose and, experience that?
It's like, it's like, what am I supposed to be doing here? It's the other way. It's like, I'm trying to ask, people ask that question. Like, what is the purpose, or what's the point of me being here, right? Mm-hmm. And I want to get into a listener emailed in, and so I want to get into that question in a second, but part of that is like, what is the purpose of me doing here? I think the way I would start this off, and we'll get into some tactical things that you can do this, which is, I believe that the purpose of your life is to remove the part of you that's preventing you from experiencing life fully, which is, again, like we talked about in the last episode, just really releasing of samskaras. You're letting go of the part of you that's blocked so you can truly experiencing yourself. And that's really what, if you want to use the word enlightenment or state of consciousness that's high, it's somebody that has fallen back and experiencing themselves. They're no longer living mind or ego or self-concept. They're truly living in there. And I think until people start experiencing that, what that means, they're going to ask that question their entire life, which is why we talk about this in the book about, hundreds of years ago, thousands of years ago, they've had this transcribed into pyramids, which is like, know thyself. It's like breadcrumbs. Before you come in here, understand what this means. Know thyself, which is almost the same thing, right? It's like, why am I supposed to be here? Well, if you know thyself, then it's you no longer search for yourself through action. And I still, too many people right now are trying to find their authentic selves through doing. They're trying to find themselves in their work. They're trying to find themselves in service. They're trying to find themselves in, how do I go contribute? They keep asking that question. They keep asking the question about, how do I do something outside so that I can have my authentic self inside? I think their question needs to be reversed, which is, how do I remove the part of me that wants to even ask that question so you can just sit there in face of life and handle and accept, or, raise the moment up in front of you that's there? And that's the highest level of service that you can do. So while I love the question, which I think people are doing, is I would start to think about it differently in terms of asking, how do I go serve, or how do I know that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, which is a great question. Don't get me wrong. I would then turn it around and saying, well, why do I even need to ask that question? Why can't I just be in the moment? And if I'm in truly the moment, if I'm present, if I'm aware, if I'm in the power of now, if I'm in now, there is no other thing for you to do but serve or but contribute in some way or another. It may just be contributing to your body. It doesn't mean you're around people. It's just, it no longer needs to be answered in the way that you think you need to be answering it. Right now, people are looking for an intellectual answer, or for somebody to almost write them out a note that says, you should be in this career, in this profession, helping this many people. That is still ego. That is still how I am going to feel better about serving in the world, versus stopping and going, if I just don't even, like, a tree doesn't think about, who am I going to give these apples to, right? It just finds itself making apples and dropping apples, right? You know, when I went to a safari in Singida, which is the largest private game reserve, after I climbed Kilimanjaro. And the thing that I actually used to teach a course on, this, it was like the seven things I learned in Kilimanjaro. It might've been nine, but whatever it was, back in like 2013. I taught it for like 2 years. But one of the main things that I learned from that is how everything is so interconnected. Like, all of nature, and as an example of this, like, when we were out there for 14 days, you know, a bird would come and open up a certain leaf, and that leaf would then open up to a fruit that some monkey would get, but then the monkey didn't eat the shell of that, the shell would drop, and then the shell would then allow some other animal to grab that shell, and that from the animal like digging up the shells, it opened up room for worms. It was like everything had a had its nature and had its place that was contributing, that was servicing. But it wouldn't see it like that, because we get so caught up in how do I feel about I'm servicing? How do I feel about I'm contributing? Versus just flowing with life is your actual service, is your actual contribution to it. Mm-hmm. And again, so we have to take the intellect out of asking that question, which is nothing wrong with asking that way. And you just simply fall back into what I'm being asked of from the moment, not generating some grand plan of how I'm going to serve or how I'm not, because you may or may not. That may or may not be in your cards, right? But what you can do, I think the highest form of serve is to raise the moment that's in front of you. So if the moment is better off for having passed by you, and you're always in service, you're always in contribution, you're always helping. Just like, again, if that bird doesn't sit there and go, I'm contributing to the society of nature, right? It doesn't say that. It just knows that it's grabbing this and taking the, you know, the nut off the tree to allow for other animals. That's in service of nature.
Yeah, it reminds me, totally. It reminds me of people, and I've asked this question many times, like, what is my gift, you know, which makes it about, like, what is my thing? And it's actually a form of, like, control and manipulation in a way, because it's like, in order to do that, the moment has to be right where I can contribute this gift rather than just showing up and just doing whatever is asked.
Yeah, it's a beautiful question, and I love the fact that people orient themselves, but it's just, it's like the splitting of the ego. It's almost as like, you know, it's like, and when sometimes when you think about death, like the ego will go, I want the ego to die so I can go live my life. Mm. And it's the splitting of the ego. Mm. The ego says that to you and you go, of course I want the ego to die so I can go live my life. But that's all ego.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing here, which is just, I'm going to go find my passion and serve so that I can feel like I'm serving. Again, it's just a shape shift at the deepest level. Until you get further back, you don't see that. And then you start to see that and you realize, wow, that was the splitting of my ego and dropping off over here, but still being in control.
Yeah,
that's why it's such a shapeshifter. Yeah. Like it literally will shape in every degree and it'll just split off. And that's the power that it has with it. So when you think about authentic self, I would, if you keep doing the deeper work, if you keep doing the work that we talk about on this podcast a lot, it makes you a better business leader. It makes you a fierce business competitor. It makes you a better parent, a better human. Everything that you do becomes lighter. You become more joyful. Therefore, you become a contribution in service to anybody else around you because you're not bringing your garbage into the world. The other way of thinking about contribution is the more clearer you are and cleaner you are, the more cleaner you're bringing in the world, which is, again, the highest form of contribution. And so the more that you can do this deeper work, that is your contribution to things. Your authentic self is here to experience itself. And if you're experiencing yourself, you're the highest form of raising the moment. Mm-hmm. So that is the highest form of contribution. Now, we can talk about how we get to that process, but understand that if working at the root, which is what the Buddhists refer to that as, right, is working at the root. By the way, I was thinking about the Buddhists. My daughter is studying the Buddha in sixth grade right now. And we get an email that says what they're working on. I saw that. So I was like, I was driving with her today. I was like, oh, so you're studying Chinese philosophy and you're going to get into Buddhism and you're studying the Buddha. And she's like, yeah. I go, you know, all of life is suffering. She's like, how did you know that? Right? Like, it was just funny. I was like, the cause of all suffering. And she's like, desire. And I'm like, yeah. I'm like, or you could think about preference. And I'm like, so I went through like Buddha's noble truths. And she's like, how do you know that? I'm like, well, this is what I do. This is the stuff we got into that whole conversation. It was pretty funny. And then the next day we're driving down there and she's all bent out of shape about her. One of my kids punched we have these little punch cards that you have to punch a hole in it 10 days before Christmas and you get like a little treat. Mm. And Maddie punched hers and she was all bent out of shape. And I go, what was Buddha's first noble truth, Sienna? And she's like, I don't want to talk about it, Dad. Like, it was like, I was like, this is the suffering that you're causing. You're suffering because you had a preference that you wanted to it. And I said, it's like a tiny little toy that you'll not even remember that you had tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And think about the suffering that you're bringing into the world. That's the lack of contribution, by the way. That's the lack of contributing to this thing, because now you're polluting and bringing that into the world. So that authentic self is really the deeper side of this, is the clearer you get, the more work you can do in yourself, the more you will naturally contribute to life.
Well, the Buddhists also say do no harm. And I think, too, as you see the ego working in the world in all its kind of mischievous ways, and realizing just not doing anything is really much better than working through the ego. Yes.
You know, we talk about relax and release, then act a lot. And the action, a lot of times, which we can get into a little bit later, but a lot of times action, there is no action. There isn't anything for you to do. And just like you said, a lot of times people, they react to an event, some scar happening, a disturbance happening, and they feel like they need to go do something outside to make themselves feel better inside. Well, if you release it, then you don't need to do something outside to make yourself feel better because you feel fine. So that's why the lack of, it's action, it's nor action nor not action is what they refer to as, right? Action versus non-action. It's the same thing. You only act if you need to act. Most people are acting purely for the egoic self, meaning that when all ego means is that I'm trying to get myself okay inside. Forget about the world, I'm trying to get me okay. So what you do is you act in a way that's gonna make your inner experience better. And that is the definition of ego, right? In terms of that, if you wanna think of it that way. And that's why we feel inauthentic, because we're actually acting on behalf of trying to make ourselves okay. And authenticity in the world is really about you interacting with the world from a clear state. So anytime that you're acting from a state of disturbance or uncomfortableness, you're not acting, you're not necessarily contributing and surrendering to the highest ability that you can. Now, you may intellectually convince yourself that since I'm helping somebody, I'm still doing this, and that may be way better of handling it that way than another way. You could say, I'm not getting angry. Great, it's a higher state of consciousness, but it's not the state of consciousness. It's not the highest form of consciousness. It's a better state of consciousness. First, if you're angry and you used to punch somebody and you're angry now and you punch a punching bag, it's probably a better state of consciousness, but there's another level. And that's just kind of the same thing that continues to go on with authenticity, is that there's layers, there's onions to this, that you just, onions, there's layers to the onion that just keep peeling back of different levels of authenticity. At some point, you just recognize that the deepest level of authenticity is to do this deep work, because then you show up and you're centered and clear to handle anything.
And I think that's what this question, too, really gets at. Yeah. So let's read that. I'm in the process of listening to The Untethered Soul and reading The Power of Now. And they obviously both really drive home the need to separate you from your thoughts. And while I understand logically that it is necessary, the problem is I'm really struggling with how to actually do that. Eckhart Tolle says, this I am realization, this sense of your own presence, is not a thought. It arises from beyond the mind. So how do I go beyond the mind to experience that? Is meditation key, or is it as simple as taking Michael Easter's advice, get out of yourself, which was something you shared in the newsletter, whether it means going for a walk in nature or volunteering, etc., and hoping that the realization comes while you're distracted from your mind?
What do you think?
So, I mean, I think there's probably many ways to do this. I think the experience of being behind your mind and witnessing and just being able to sit there in silence, however that comes up. And just for me at this point, it's like glimpses. This is not extended period of time, but just little glimpses of like, oh, my mind is quiet in this moment. Who is there if my mind is quiet? And even just in the watching of a very, very, very chatty mind, like, oh, I'm watching this very chatty mind. And so to me, that thing behind, I don't even know what to call it, does feel expansive. Like, it does feel almost bigger than like body, self, whatnot.
Yeah, you know, it's I always like to think about this as you can't find it in thought. And this is what I think a lot of people are going to this particular question, is like you're trying to find the answer in the intellect, or you're trying to find yourself through thought, which is the self-concept that you created. And so the more that you're trying to find your authentic self through intellect or through words, which is the primary way of how you listen to things inside there, it's not going to be. That's why it's got to be a knowing. That's why the old adage, which is, you know, you can't mistake the menu for the meal. You can read a menu and it can help orient yourself to making a decision that you're doing. But the meal, when you eat an orange, tastes a lot different than reading about an orange in a menu. And that's your knowing. And if most people are just reading right now and then rereading it, thinking that that's the experience, or mistaking it that that's the meal. And so then they get more hooked into the intellect of thinking that's what it is. The awareness or the being is where the only place you can truly experience the knowing. If the mind is talking and you find yourself listening to it, that's not you. That is the mind. That is, once you become aware again that the mind had been talking, that you had paying attention to it, then you go, how do I know? That's what kind of what you said right there. How do I know that I'm listening to this? How do I know that I'm aware? And then the other way you can say is that, like, who is the one that hears this, right? I mean, that's the question that I always ask myself is, how do I know my physical body is sore? How do I know, like, I can feel like I'm getting a little sick? How do I feel like I have a tremendous amount of energy right now? How do I feel, you know, how do you know? Because you're in there knowing. But the minute that you try to point it back to the mind, which is what you do, it's almost like you quickly get it for a second and then you instantly put it back. Mm-hmm. And you want the mind to tell you about it because you're so addicted to the mind doing that, that the minute you get a glimpse of this experience, your mind jumps in and goes, let me tell you about the experience. And so then you go, yeah, tell me about the experience, because you're so addicted to it. And that's why the further you get back, the less that mind will jump in, and you'll just find yourself basking deeper back there. And then you'll see the mind come in there and go, would you like me to narrate it for you? And you're just like, no, I don't need your narration, thank you. Like, and it just kind of goes away. But we're all of us are so addicted to that mind that the minute we get a glimpse of that, the mind wants it to be, remember, the self-concept only survives, which is another form of ego. It's the masquerading self, I've heard it described as, like the mask that you see, the masquerading self. It's not the self, it's the masquerading self, or the self-concept, which a self-concept is a concept. Concepts are not real. So the only way a self-concept can persist is if it has energy on it. So the minute you fall back and start to become aware or the knowing of you, it instantly drains energy away from the self-concept. And the self-concept feels that, so it instantly triggers itself and goes, pay attention to me. So the minute it wants you to pay attention to me is so that you can, now it can go back to its energy, which is why, that's how it survives. So that's why, you know, Yorke Sharir once, I think he said a long time ago, which is an ignored guest quickly leaves. The only reason why it leaves is because there is no more energy. Just like if there's a hologram, you know, that's out there that's coming from a projector, if the projector's not putting the hologram or it's not plugged in for electricity, there's no more hologram. And so it's the same thing here. It's just you're giving it so much energy right now. 99% of your energy is going towards this self-concept.
And it's so sneaky because, like, in that moment where it's just, like, calm and peaceful, and it's like, oh, this is calm and peaceful. Yes. And then it's like, how do I hang on to this? And, yes, like, I think your mind almost, I feel like, or at least my experience, almost tricks you into thinking you're doing spiritual work, like, through the mind. But it's not. It's just hooking you in another way.
Yeah, it'll do anything it can to grab you. Mm-hmm. And that's the wild whole thing about this, is it literally will do everything that it can to grab you and shapeshift you in a way. That's why I'm saying that the ego will split. It'll split itself. That's why I even used that example earlier, which is like, oh, I need to die before I die, or I need to kill the ego. And it's like, then I can go live. The minute it says, then I can go live, that is another form of ego. It splits itself. Mm-hmm. It's literally going, okay, you're going to go die, so then I can go live. That in itself is still ego. It's just, it's now quickly grabbed you to go, now you can go live because now you've killed this over here, but you haven't done anything. And that's why it's so, you have to just, you have to pay attention. That's why everyone always comes back to you. If you're aware, if you're in the power of now, if you can see this, if you're surrendering, you watch it all unfold. And then that's how you start to feel more authentic. Also, if you just, like, I am, like, who, you ask that one question, is who is I am? You know, I am the one that experiences. This is the technique that you can do. I think you have to start small, though, right? You have to start, like, it's not going to happen on big things that trigger you. But can you do it with the driver in front of you? Can you do it with the email that is like a 3 irritation at work? And just simply ask, once you get irritated or frustrated, can you simply go, who's the one that's irritated? How do I know I'm irritated? How do I know that the irritation is now gone? And you just start with the simple things that you can bring awareness into that moment where it tries to distract you. And the more you can do that, the more you'll be able to simply watch this process that's unfolding, because it's all it is. It's a process that unfolds. Just we're so addicted to the process. It's way more addicted than anything we've ever had in our lives. We're so close to it that we don't realize that the process is happening.
Do you think meditation is key to building that muscle, or do you think you could do it with emails, phone calls, anything that is kind of just showing up? Yeah. Do you need both?
I don't think you need it. I think it helps. Mm. I think meditation helps. I think anything that you're doing to work on there's past life regression. There is cathartic breathing. There is, 100 different techniques that are out. There's cold water therapy. Everything, all that helps, right? All helps. And what it's helping you do is to be able to stay centered longer while life is happening, to be aware of what's happening so you can continue to release more. So all of the techniques are designed to give you more time before you collapse, before it grabs you. That's why meditation, when you first start to meditate, people come in and they go, or it's a little less now because I think more people are meditating more. But I remember when I first started meditating, people were like, I can't meditate. And I'd be like, well, why can't you meditate? And they'd be like, well, I can't meditate because I have all these thoughts. And I go, well, that is your meditation. You've realized, oh, you have all these thoughts. And I'd always ask the question, so you don't think you have thoughts outside of meditation? I go, well, no, I do. I go, no, you're just so addicted to your thoughts outside of meditation, you have no idea they're even running your life. Mm. And that becomes the spiritual kind of gateway drug into meditation. At least it was for me, it was meditation. Because I started realizing, like, wow, I'm so addicted to this. I'm so addicted to these thoughts. The deeper you have meditation, it's like you're training in meditation, but in life, you have to bring that into it. So you have to still do the deeper work. It's actually very, to me, it's very easy to meditate. And I don't mean easy in the way of like it's always been easy. It's just sure, is it finding the time, but like you just kinda, you know, you either open your eyes or close your eyes, you do a mantra, whatever your meditation is, and it's relatively easy. The hard part is actually bringing that into the waking state. It's bringing that when there's a problem. Can you meditate when there's a problem? Can you be experiencing life in this world but not so caught up in the world that you can experience what you're actually experiencing? And the answer for most is no. That's why meditation is, the more meditative states you get into, the more you can bring into these smaller problems first. That's why you start with something small. Your child, right, does something and it's like, you know, you're irritated because they didn't put their plate in, right? Okay, you're frustrated. In that moment, most people aren't to the point where they're going to throw the plate, right? So that happens and you go, wow, see how fast I got frustrated from this? And see how fast my mind wanted to quickly just like get frustrated? Or wanted to be irritated at my partner because this plate was out. That's what your mind does. And you just become aware of that simple step in that process. You go, man, my child left their plate out. Okay, great, we can work on that. But I was about to get angry for the next 15 minutes because the plate was out there. That's where you start. It's the simple, simple things. And you watch that process unfold. And then you realize, you go, well, this must be happening everywhere. But you have to start with these very small things where you can stay in control, but still experience the disturbance so you can start relaxing through it. That's how you develop this muscle. That is the real work. Meditation will help you do that. It gives you that space. But what really has to happen to find that, you know, that true authentic self is to keep removing the things. And then you don't have to find your authentic self. You show up as authentic self. And it wouldn't even be a thought that even asks the question about how do I show up authentically. You just are. And you just show up. But that's where, like, where people start is like these simple things. Your phone dies early and now you're frustrated. Okay, great. Can you handle that? If you can't handle it, you can't, right? Or again, all these, think about all the small things that don't go your, the weather or whatever it is that don't go your way. That's where you have to start this process of going back to this, what am I supposed to be doing here? Get rid of the things that are telling you what not to do, or giving you the things that are telling you to do that you're listening to that are not part of what you're supposed to be doing. And you get rid of that, there is no more voice telling you what to do, and therefore you show up in contribution. Mm. But it's that, again, the first step, and I don't think we've talked about it at that level before, which is just, I always think about like the simple things. Again, like your sneakers have muddy and you got, you know, dirt on your floor, okay, right? You're now frustrated. You just simply watch, now, can I handle this? Can I go get the vacuum and sweep this up or vacuum it up? And instead of, this is bothering me, then I yell at one of my kids because the next moment happens. That's where people get triggered. Mm-hmm. So it's these simple, like all of life becomes these moments where you can just pause, reflect. Again, it's relax, release, then act. So I used that analogy this morning, right? Like I put my shoes on to come in here and I realized I was tracking dirt everywhere. And I go, oh, I must just go grab the vacuum. But like before, that would have been, oh man, I can't believe, why didn't I do this? I don't have time for this. I'm already late. Your kids are, you just don't make it a mess. You just simply go, what's the next action? And the action was just to pick up the vacuum. And it took me 45 seconds and I put it up and I put it away. Mm-hmm. But it's, we stop using intellect to try to find who you are. You're never going to find it there. You'll go down a path and it'll hold you there, but you're never going to itch that part of you, because it can't be solved with words. It can't be solved in a game plan. It can't be solved in a path that you've laid out for it. Because all the path is saying is, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm going to go do this. And that path is the same path as the other way. It's the same form. The only way you truly do this is to get rid of and keep getting rid of the stuff that's causing that in the first place. And then you show up to the moment, you raise the moment, and therefore you're truly a living, authentic self.
Do you think you have to actually be like, maybe not even meditating, but sitting in stillness or doing some activity where you are like grounded in a quiet place to be, have that felt experience of like, oh, there's something different besides my mind in here?
No, I think you'd be anywhere. So I think the disturbance has to be small enough that you can stay seated. Mm-hmm. And you have to be aware, and you have to look for this process. That's why I always tell everyone when they first come into Project U is like the first week that we're going to be doing this is all about you just being aware. Because all I want you to do is being aware of how many times you get triggered. And then go get triggered and do your thing. I just want you to start being aware of it. People come back and they go, wow, I had no idea how aware I was. I had no idea how much I got triggered by all these things. Mm-hmm. And I go, think about all the things that you weren't aware of that triggered you, that you're paying attention to. But that's where it starts. It's like if you want to learn how to, you know, ski, you have to learn first how to, like, you have to be aware that you're putting what boots are and how you put your boots on and how to get the right boots and how to get the right skis or how you put your skis on before you can even get on the mountain. And it's the same thing with spirituality. It's just sequential. It starts with a phase. No matter anything you do in your life starts at some point small and you just build upon it. Most of us want to go out there and skip all of that and be like, and what they really say is like, the ego will jump in and go, well, I'm just going to go meditate and therefore I'm going to be enlightened, or I'm going to go, I got this stuff down, or I'm going to go read enough things and take enough classes and go sit in the Himalayas and go be around all these masters, which is wonderful if you want to do that, but it's not going to do the work for you. That's like literally like going around and sitting next to famous baseball players and watching them pitch and watching them hit and being in the dugout and reading all about their books and then thinking that you're a major baseball player. Mm. It's not. You actually, in order to be a major league baseball player, you have to do the work. And the deep work is not, the reading helps, the models help, all of that helps. Like, and sure, that interaction with baseball players would help you become a better baseball player. But if you're not swinging the bat or throwing a ball, you're not going to get any better. If you're not taking at bats in spirituality wise, in terms of practicing letting go in these very small things, you're not going to be able to let bigger things go, which then lead to more greater peace and authenticity.
Mm. I love that. I think that's a really rare perspective, is that like actually just being in the world, doing what you're normally doing, like you don't actually have to set aside time every single morning to meditate and still be doing this work at a pretty deep level.
You know, there's many people say that I've heard it before, that one act of release, I think it's like a normal, like one act of release at all is worth like 6 to 8 hours of meditation. Mm. So like one act of like kid leaves the plate, or your partner leaves the plate and you see it and you get frustrated and you actually release that energy pattern. Again, we talked about the last time about the samskaras. You release that. That's worth like 6 to 8 hours of meditation. Mm-hmm. So think about how long that would take to be able to do that.
Yeah. I also heard another study recently that it was something like you just need to focus on an item, anything that you choose, preferably something calming like leaf or nature or whatnot, for 1 minute, and it has the same effects on your body as if you were to do meditation for 20 minutes.
That's
or
awesome.
Something to that effect.
Yeah.
Not exactly the same thing, but just the idea that we don't have to have these like huge chunks of time set aside to be building that awareness.
And also that like, it's not that you only do it during these times. I think that's where people get caught up and like, well, I'm going to this retreat next week and then I'm going to work on there. Well, what are you doing the whole other time of your life?
Yeah.
Those are wonderful things to do because you're helping advance your skill set. You're getting more knowledge. That's all great stuff. But if you're not putting it into practice to do the work, you're not becoming a better player. You're not becoming a deeper person. You're not becoming a more higher consciousness being unless you release that part. It's not just going to happen to you. That's why spirituality is so difficult to talk about, because it's not a, I'm going to go, it's like if you were going to go run a marathon, like somebody can show a plan and you still got to go do the work though, right? If somebody laid out and said, Gary, the first week you're going to run 20 miles, you know, the second week you're going to run 30 miles and you're going to take a break. If you don't do the miles and you show up to the marathon, you're not going to finish it, right? And so you have to do the training. That's why all of this and spirituality, what people are really searching for now, I believe, in spirituality, which is how do I do the work? How do I run my mile, right? That's what they're looking for. That's why we try to bring these tactical examples to it. In my experience, what people are asking, which is, okay, when rubber hits the road, what do I do? How do I actually make this happen? How do I actually put this in play? And that's what we try to bring into 200% Life concept, which is when you're in life, let go. That is your play. That is your work. Release first. Relax, release, then act. That is your play, but you have to start. And the more you do this, the more at-bats you get. And the more at-bats you get, the more you see it, the more you start to see it, the more you put it into play, and you become a deeper, wiser individual. But that's what people are really looking for, Caitlin, right? They're looking for, how do I actually do this? Like, that's really what people are saying. I mean, I know hundreds of podcasts I've done, and people ask the same questions, which is just like, okay, how do I really do this, Adam? Like, what do I do? And it's they want, like, how do I physically move my body, right? Or, like, how do I do something? How do I write it down?
Give me a checklist.
Yes, yeah, so they want to do that. I go, no, you actually, I'll give you the checklist. It's relaxed, it's released, but it's way different than anything you've ever done before. Mm. But that's the deep work. That's the work you have to do. Mm. And what all of the books and scriptures and wonderful people that are out there that share these ideas, there's so many great masters out there, they're all pointing to the same thing. We say it differently because everyone has a different nature and we see things differently. We experience it. We use words differently. Some people are more charismatic. I talk very fast. Some people talk very slow. Right? All these different things. And by the way, I used to think that, like, well, if you're going to be a spiritual person, you have to talk very slow, until I've listened to other people who are spiritual masters that talk very fast. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, it's just, you have a nature, right? And your nature is what it is. Like, it doesn't mean it's you have to talk slow or you don't have to talk slow, or you have to be charismatic or not charismatic. That has nothing to do with it. Mm. It's just truth is truth and wisdom is wisdom, and I think that's what people are looking for, which is, how do I actually go do this?
So if we could leave people with one takeaway of one thing that they can do today if they want to experience their authentic self, like, what would just be the one thing that they could be looking out for, like, okay, this is my opportunity to have that experience?
To me, it's you have to be aware of what's happening. If you're not aware, you're not going to be able to do any of this. So, like, this, I know it. And then people go, well, what does aware mean, Adam? Like, what is it being aware? Stop going to the mind and asking what awareness is. That's what instantly everyone listening to this podcast goes, okay, what is aware? And, like, they look up, they try to ask their mind, their mind tries to define it, what it is. It's just looking around. You see things, you're aware. You're aware that there's a voice going on. You're aware that you feel a certain way in your body right now. Maybe you're tired, maybe you're excited, maybe you're anxious, maybe you're angry. You feel it. That's being aware. Then you're aware that you got frustrated with this plate, or you're aware that there's traffic. That is the process itself, and that awareness will then leak into you naturally wanting to release that, because you go, oh, this doesn't feel good. If I release this, I naturally feel better, and that builds upon itself. But until you're aware, it doesn't matter how many techniques people lay out for you, you're not going to do them, because all you're doing is you're doing them at the intellectual level, which isn't going to do what you're looking for it to do, which is then you're going to think, like, none of this works. You have to be aware. That awareness keeps you centered, keeps you present. It keeps you in that seat of consciousness. There, from that point, is where you do your work. But if you're not at that point, you can't do the work, because then you're just caught in ego, or you're caught in mind. And then it's impossible to do the deeper work. And that's why everyone writes books about the power of now, or present moment, or being in the moment, or surrender. Because all of those things are saying, if you're not aware, you can't do any of this work.
It sounds like, too, it's also a commitment to being aware, because as you're saying, like, each time you do it, it's almost like you get a little bit further back into awareness, so you have to keep showing up.
It becomes easier to be aware. It becomes more difficult to let the relaxation happen, because the releases and the relaxations become bigger, mm-hmm. And in the beginning, you become aware. That's kind of like that first stage of spirituality. It's like, maybe you have one glimpse of awareness and you think you're in this honeymoon phase, but then the reality sets in and you realize, holy mackerel, like, there's a whole bunch of work to do here. And you naturally find yourself wanting to be aware. And then what happens, though, is bigger things start showing up and you're going, wow, this feels really difficult. But then what will happen is you get to a point through this process where actually, no matter how big it is, you know that at some point it'll go away and it'll release. And so you end up actually... You look forward to it only when it shows up. You don't look forward to it being like, okay, I'm ready for it, because it'll show up when you're not ready for it. Just show up. Anytime that it shows up, you truly allow it. You now that it's there and you're experiencing it, then you look forward to releasing it, because you know it's going to be gone forever. And that becomes your gift. You go, bring it up. No matter where you are, it just matters. It just shows up randomly. And so that when you do that deeper work, that's what gives you the ability to find your more authentic self.